Hello, this is Les Brown, Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show. Listen, continue to listen, and you'll discover your greatness.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Well, hello, me darlings.
Oh, dear. Another silly one. It's so funny. I was reading one of the reviews in iTunes, and this guy said that my laugh got on his nerves. That one would, I bet. Hey, listen, man. You know, I understand. He said he liked the podcast, though. So just my laugh. Well, I ain't going to give it up. You know, just not going to. But hopefully you can put up with it. Grow to love it. So anyway, here we are. I'm just feeling great today. And I don't know if you listened to Les Brown last week. Wow. He's such an inspiration. And so here we are today. What are we going to talk about? This is my solo show. This is the 30-minute one, right? So, you know, it's always interesting because, you know, there's so many things we could chat about. And it's always interesting that way. If you could see me right now, I'm actually leaving tomorrow. I'm going to be going to the TLC. It's called the Transformational Leadership Council. It's headed up by Jack Canfield. And Jack and I have become pretty good friends over the last little while here, and I suppose a couple of years. And but the TLC is this amazing organization where he invites, and not just him anymore, but there's a whole board. In fact, you know, all of us get to vote on the different people that are invited in to the Transformational Leadership Council. So you can be nominated, then you go through a voting process. And it just is it's a wonderful collection of people who are committed to transformation and just committed to doing good work in the world. And there's a few rules, though. You can't have a big ego. And I suppose that's hard to say to a bunch of trainers. Can't have a big ego, because of course we all have. But you have to leave the ego at the door, which everyone does. But there's so many amazing people there, and just so many great connections. And I don't know if you ever sort of sometimes look at your life and you wonder, how did I get here? And so I just really appreciate that kind of journey where suddenly, you know, the people who were part of the transformation for me, the people whose books I read, are suddenly the people I hang out with. And I think that's possible for everyone. Everyone has that possibility to become the person they were born to be. And in that process, attract to them whatever they want. I know it sounds a little woo. Should I laugh for that guy right now? Oh, dear. But it's, you know, I know, by the way, I really appreciate your honest feedback. I do. So I'm not really making fun at all. I just, I think it's always funny because, you know, I remember when I first started training and I'd asked the whole audience to write comments on their comment sheet, you know, about what the program was like. And I'd look through them, and of course, every negative one was like, you know, a stab in the heart. And of course, you know, what I try and look for is this constant improvement, places where you can improve. And it's really good to have the good stuff, and it's really good to be told that it's working. And this woman that she wrote on the Canadian version. This is funny on iTunes, because if you look in the Canadian one, there's about 30 people. Canada, what's up? Wake up. Come on, Canada. This is my home country. I'm Canadian now. I have a Canadian passport. You know, in America, there's, I don't know, over 100 reviews. In Canada, there's 30. So I'm not sure what's going on, Canada, because I know how many downloads are in Canada, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands. So please, Canada. But it's interesting that every iTunes account has its own review process. You'd think they'd throw them all together so you could actually get more of a cross-section of the different countries, but you actually have to go in, and I'm not even sure how to do that for like England and Dubai and all the other countries we're in. So anyway, enough of that. I really want to talk about a journey that I was on, you know, getting to this place, this Transformational Leadership Council. When I look back, there's one of my favorite sayings that every master was once a disaster. And I certainly was all of that. And as I think back, and I think back about how my attitude has changed over my lifetime, and that attitude shift, that it's really started to become magnetic and attracting the things and the every dream and every person. And it's almost like it's almost spooky. Spooky. It's a spooky show tonight. But you know, I almost feel like playing a song again, something that will cheer us all up. You know, I know so many of you who've spoken to me personally, and I was just at a training in Toronto, and so many people came up. It surprises me sometimes the type of people that listen. And it always is gratifying that people do, you know. I mean, it's a kind of a weird thing where you start something and people start tuning in, right? So I want to play a song right now, which I don't do this very often because this is always a little bit more complicated, add songs in. It's just something to cheer us up as it sets up my story around every master being a disaster.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing.
That is so true.
When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life. Doo-doo. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so the story I want to tell you, it really changed my life. Because, I mean, imagine when I look back at a number of years ago, I think it's got to be almost a decade now, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, where I was asked to MC a wedding. And it's good friends of mine. And they asked for a non-conventional wedding. And I'm saying, okay, I can do non-conventional. So I plan this thing and I do this wedding and I completely mess it up in the biggest way. And there are some people there that, in fact, people who will be listening to this podcast, you might say, no, it's fine. But the truth is, it wasn't. I mean, the groom side of the family were incredibly upset. Many of them left. And I mean, it was just a real mess. And what it was is, I mean, there was a lot of things I teach trainers today. And I can't even believe that I'm saying that I teach trainers today. It's kind of what I'm known for, as the trainer's trainer. But the truth was, at the time, I went into this kind of like, I mean, I felt sick for almost 2 years. And every time I'd gaze out into space, you know, my ex-wife at the time, she'd say, David, stop thinking about it. I mean, we're talking about nine months later, a year later, a year and a half later, just where I kept wanting to rewind and go back and somehow fix what I did, because I just didn't realize that, you know, a wedding is so much more than, you know, entertaining the bride and groom. But there's traditions that the grandmother wants and the family wants, and, you know, cutting of the cake and reading of it. And I went to town. I'll tell you the whole story another time, because it really is, it's a great story that actually changed my life. And the guy whose wedding it was, him and I talked about this recently, and I asked permission if I could start sharing more and more about this story. And I want to do it in my book coming up. And so I'm not, when you kind of look back at the time of something that was so horrendous for me, I mean, I left the wedding that night and I didn't even come back to the party. I was standing behind the curtain after I finished the MC portion of the wedding, and I was sweating and I was scared and I felt sick, and I knew that I'd ballsed it up, and I knew that I'd gone too far. I knew that I'd crossed many lines. I knew that all these different things, I wanted the world to just swallow me up. And so I left that day and I didn't come back. And the next day I flew to Europe and stayed out of Canada for almost 3 weeks. That was just easier than dealing with it. And but the one thing I made a plan, I said, you know, I would never, ever go on stage again. I would never put myself in that situation. Not that I'd been doing it before. I mean, I'd emceed a couple of weddings, and obviously I'd been on stage a couple of times when I was a kid. I used to do a lot of acting, and, you know, I kind of wasn't afraid of it. But after this moment, I was terrified of it. I was just like, never again will I put myself in the line of that. And we know that, you know, the three greatest fears in humanity, the number one is the fear of humiliation. The number one is the fear of rejection. Number two, I'm sorry. And number three is the fear of death. So over death, most people, you know, don't want to put themselves in a situation where they could get humiliated. And of course, that means the stage is one of those locations. And that's why I teach so much using the stage as a metaphor, because so many people have are terrified of being on stage. In fact, I do a program in November and December this year called Good to Great, which is a really, it's an advanced trainer program. But I also run another program called Journey to the Stage, where I use the stage as a metaphor and powerful presentations. And, you know, I really love teaching this stuff now. But I mean, that was years and years and years of pain of reliving the moment, wishing it hadn't happened. And then one day I went to a program. My marriage was on the rocks, and Pam and I, who are friends now. I mean, and not that we weren't. It was just, you know, we sort of separated for a lot of different reasons. But one is that we really weren't happy together. She's an amazing, amazing person, and we see each other quite a lot. And she's a terrific person. But you know, our marriage was on the rocks, and she'd heard about this personal development program. And the last time I'd ever been to anything like that, which is only once in all a dozen years, was, in 1990, I think it was. Anyway, here we are. She asked me if I'll go. I say, sure. So I go to this program. It's being run by T. Harv Eker. And T. Harv Eker is this, you know, big trainer in the world. He'd written a book, The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. He had the largest training company in the world at the time. I thought his name was Herb. I had no idea who he was. I hadn't read about him. But this is a warrior camp. This is up in the foothills of Whistler. And here we are. I go up there and we spend like 5 days at this intense camp. We're doing firewalks and we're doing, you know, all kinds of things, you know, rock climbing, and I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, and it's all out there and it's all designed to sort of break you through fear and act like a warrior, you know. But I do this warrior training, and halfway through the second day, I see that the impact that he's having on the audience, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, there's a guy who can stand in front of the room and really knows how to manage energy and manage people and move them through an experience. And I looked over at my wife and I said, hey, I'm going to teach this program. And she said, yeah, I thought you would. And it took me about a year to get on the stage. But during that year, I remember the theme of this podcast is Every Master Was Once a Disaster. And I'd say that I'm pretty comfortable on stage these days. And I've trained hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, I'm known for my authenticity. And most people who know me really, really well say I'm exactly the same on stage as off stage, which most people aren't. Most people try and put on a bit of a show. They try and be more interesting than interested. And that's one of the things, the principles I teach on stage is to be more interesting. And you can, anything you learn on for training, I always say you practice in your real life. Be more interested in people and less interesting, you know, in life. And life's going to change. It's going to get better. Understand that every master was once a disaster, and know that you're going to be kind to yourself through the learning period of anything. Whenever you like this podcast, I mean, now here I am now playing songs, and you know, I plug everything in, and I just kind of know what I'm doing, and I keep getting my producer. He's sort of like, he'll phone me and say, "Oh my goodness, do you do that? Do you need me anymore?" He said that today. It's really funny, but you know, the idea though is I'm then given an opportunity, because I really buckle down. I start learning. I start modeling. Modeling is the greatest thing. So, I mean, when I was Harv's assistant and I was running around, you know, doing everything for him, you know, I noticed who did what before. And all I thought was, if I just do any job, like if I looked after his table, if I got his meal, it didn't matter what it was. And that's what I was. You were a bit of a lackey for a long time there. I just would do it better than anyone else could possibly do it. And people notice, you know, I mean, if I've noticed that, you know, when I travel around the world, you know, I met people who work in toilets who are the best guys in there, and they're happy and they do an amazing job. And you just want to put your hand in your pocket and give them 10 bucks or $5 to have a pee. But you do, you just had that kind of, wow, what a great guy, right? So if you've got a crappy job, if you're out there, you don't like what you're doing, become great at it. Do it better. Don't go in there with attitude and watch what happens. People will notice and you'll get moved up. You'll get moved around. You'll start to attract those things you want. So here I am. I'm given my big break. And so I was meant to go out and do a 1 hour piece. And I remember I've been sort of like 7-8 months. I've been to like 9 of his programs. And here I am I'm given 1 hour piece to go out on stage and kind of prove myself. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. And there's like 1,600 people in the audience. And And so I go out and it's meant to be this quiet piece. It's reflective, you know, so I do that. And it's a script. So, I mean, I had to learn the script. And I listened to Harv do it like 40 times. And then I modeled kind of what he did, which wasn't really me. But it was a good way to start in the beginning because I didn't know how to be me in the beginning. I kind of tried to be somebody else because I wasn't sure. I didn't know how to be authentic because I was terrified of being myself. Because the last time I was myself, I completely ballsed it up. So here I go. I go out on stage, I do this thing, and I'm asking the questions, and it's all designed through accelerated learning, whole brain learning, fully interactive, and it's working. But I have to put everyone into this one process where they, where they're doing this writing process. I still use the same voice today if I'm doing that kind of stuff. I'll say, and if you need a Kleenex, raise your hand. You know, and everyone's writing, the Baroque music is playing, and I'm looking, oh my, in the back of my head, it's like, oh, it's working. Oh God! You know, it's like I look like a little duck, you know, where it's all calm on top, but underneath he's like, "Yeah, I can't believe it." Anyway, so and on the stage is this huge bar chair, you know, like a bar stool kind of thing, all made of metal. And I'm on quite a high stage because we're in like 1,600 people, and I go to sit back on the stage, and all of a sudden the lights go out, and somebody whacks me on the head as hard as they can, or knock all the wind out of my body. I got a mic on, I'm like this, right? Anyway, I don't know what's going on, but now it's pitch black. My head's throbbing. And I mean, I can hear the gasp from the audience behind the curtain, and I can hear laughing from the other half. And what had happened was, as I sat down, the two back legs of my stool had fallen off the back of the stage, and I'd gone straight back through the curtain, smashed my head on the wall. And now this is a high stage. It was like 3.5-4 feet. I'm suspended there on this metal chair that's knocked all the wind out of my lungs. And all the audience can see are my feet hovering. It looks like a David Copperfield trick, hovering halfway up the curtain. Well, you know, like two and a half feet off the curtain, maybe 3 feet up off the curtain. And here I am. I'm dazed. I mean, I really whack my head hard. I'm like, all the air's gone out of my body as I've sort of crunched into the wall. Anyway, so I somehow find the strength to lunge through the curtain. And as I look out in the audience, half the people are just hysterical laughing and half are in absolute shock. And Shelley, who still works with me today, Shelley Wieners, she comes running down the aisle and I can see her mouthing the F word. Oh, anyway, she's like that. And she's just running towards the stage. Anyway, I don't know what to do. But I'm still dazed. And I'm like, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Go back to your writing. And I haven't really figured out. This is when I turn around and see what's really happened. Anyway, that was kind of my first big break on stage. And fortunately, because people were not fortunate, I wish it's unfortunate right now, but they turned the cameras off. They had cameras on the whole room, but they turn them off when people are doing the private writing part because most people don't want to write intimate stuff when they're being filmed. So I don't have a copy of this, but so many people I know today were there in that room that day. Every master was once a disaster. And I was a disaster. Anyway, my first time doing my first big event, and I know there's a number of guys I trained today that were at that event. It was in New Jersey. And again, it was, I can't remember how many people it was. I think it was 3,000 to 4,000 people. I remember I was doing between 1,500 and 6,000 people every weekend training. And so I'm doing my very, very first MMI. This is a Millionaire Mind Intensive. And remember, you know, at the Millionaire Mind Intensive, we would sell anywhere from, you know, $1.5 million to $3.5 million worth of personal development programs to a cold room. So this was a big sales thing as well. And so here I am on stage and I wasn't feeling great. It was interesting actually, because the Dalai Lama's personal physician happened to be in the room and he treated me one night. I'll tell you, that's in a whole other story. It was absolutely bizarre, this guy, but unbelievable. I mean, I can't even describe what happened to my body when this guy started laying his hands on me, but unbelievable. Anyway, so here I am on stage. I'm in the middle of a sell. And remember, you know, the Millionaire Mind Intensive is designed to sell product and change lives, but it's also designed to sell product and change lives, designed to sell product and change lives. And so you have to be good at selling, which means you have to really be able to stand in the fire, because obviously a lot of people don't like being sold. So you get that kind of dark energy coming out of the audience when you start selling. And some people, they hate it right from the moment you open your mouth. But again, you know, you don't sell the people. This is a great thing about life. You know, if you look at a stage as being like life, if you focus on the people that don't like you or don't want what you've got, on the from the stage, you're going to feel like crap and do a terrible job. Focus on the people that are really engaged, that want something, that are really hearing something that's really impacting them. Life's great. And that's the same true life when you walk through the streets. I mean, there's some people who aren't going to like you, and there's some people who don't like what I'm doing on this. Great. And I appreciate their input, and I appreciate that they it's not their thing, my accent, my whatever, right? That's up to them. There's lots of other people to listen to. And it's also really interesting that people who don't like you take the time to tell you. They probably go around telling everyone, don't like you either, I don't like you. But no, again, I'm not talking about this guy who wrote that one comment because I thought he was very fair. But the idea, though, is that I'm on the stage, and I take my jacket off, and I've got like an $800 jacket, which sounds very ostentatious, I know. But at the time, I'm doing my best to impress everyone because I'm trying to make it as a trainer, and I hadn't learned then how to be completely authentic and be myself without apology. And so I'm still trying to kiss a little booty. And so I throw my jacket on the back of this bar stool, the same one I'd fallen off, maybe not the same one, but the same height. And I'm starting to do this sell, you know, which is a big deal for the Peaks crowd. And as I'm selling, suddenly the lights all go out in the auditorium, and I look around and my jacket's on fire. Now, remember, this is my first big event. Anyway, what happened was when I throw my jacket over the stool, the lights from the stage were really those piercing, you know, stage lights that shine up on the big black curtains. Anyway, it sort of melted and then caught fire to the inside of my jacket. Every master was once a disaster. So here I am. I'm completely blinded. I'm like, what's going on? This is my first big event. I'm trying to prove myself again. And the only reason I got the event was Harv was sick, so he couldn't even get there. He didn't think I was ready for this. So here I go. I carry on. I think I'm just going to carry on, right? And I've been through enough things in my life not to panic. And I start carry on selling. I say, everyone, just stay seated. We'll sort it out, you know. And I carry on talking. And Trevor McGee, he's my logistics supervisor. God bless him. Goes running around and finds this big spotlight, and he runs a cord out somewhere else, and he plugs it in. As he plugs it in, imagine you've been in the dark now for about 6 minutes. So it's pitch black. I actually had my eyes closed for a minute there because I couldn't see anything anyway. And suddenly someone turns a spotlight onto your eyes and absolutely burns the corneas right into your head. Now I can't see anything. And it's like someone stuck needles into my eyes, but multiple times. And now I'm trying to keep it together. I can't see anything. I'm blind. And there's this, this huge spotlight into my face. Did I mention every master was once a disaster? You know, and I could go on, you know, as I went through this journey to become a trainer, and really now where I have the confidence to go really on any stage, not that I don't prepare, I do prepare, but I also have the confidence in my ability to be able to walk into a cold room and do these things. But in the beginning, it was terrifying. I practiced and practiced and practiced. I modeled the best. I'd watch people, and I still do today. I watch things and I hear things, and I think, that's awesome. What a great wow. And I often go and tell people. I say, can I steal that? That's incredible. You know, and I know that all art is theft, really. I mean, we all steal from each other. However, I steal in the greatest way, by the way. I mean, I don't steal, but you're inspired by someone. If Les Brown inspires me, and I use his saying, like one of his great sayings is, the two most important days in your life are the day you're born, the day you realize why. You know, and or discover why. Well, that's, you know, I can use that. And some people think I wrote it. I didn't. But I use it, and I will use it quite often because I really like it. It inspired me to think about when I, you know, the day I realized why I was born. And it was to do this kind of work, to become a trainer, to do this kind of work, to make a difference, to live a bigger life. And I think it's everyone's birthright. And it doesn't matter, going back to the guy in the washroom, if that's what your job is, you know, you can impact lives with a great attitude. I used to do it because, I mean, so many of the, with my traveling, I did some really interesting jobs. And you can impact lives just with your presence, with a smile, with your energy, with your interest in people, the questions you ask, the energy you put out. And that ripple can go so deep. It's not, you don't have to be on anyone's stage to do it. You just have to be present in your body and really, like I said, interested, not interesting, not doing your dog and pony show or putting your masks on. That's what a lot of people do. They live with masks. So they'll hide behind a mask because it's so much easier than showing up. So in front of one person, they're one person. In front of somebody else, there's somebody else. In front of their boss, there's somebody else. The real person shows up with the person they trust the most, maybe their best girlfriend or best boyfriend or husband and wife, and that real person shows up. So anyway, so getting back to the theme then. So every master was once a disaster. So how do you take that analogy and use it? And what I did was I just realized in the end it was going to be a journey still today, because I remember doing my first program on my own. And the audience mutinied. It was a 5-day program. And I think 4 days, 3.5 days in, the audience mutinied and I left. I came back after they asked me about a day later. But it was just this interesting thing that you go through, right? How do you learn? How do you get great at anything? How do you develop those muscles? And I find it fascinating because I have two boys that most parents will tell their kids to go practice something. And why don't you just practice? Why don't you practice? If you only practice, you get my kids play guitar and drums. Of course, you know, getting them to practice sometimes like pulling teeth. But the truth is that if we treated ourselves the same way we treat our kids, then we would absolutely be better at what we do, right? We would absolutely master anything. And if every master was once a disaster, we have to be a disaster before we can be a master, which means we have to go through this valley of learning, this valley of doubt, this valley of fear, this valley of uncertainty, this valley where we just don't think we're good enough. And, you know, and I think that really, What I suppose my big lesson's been through this whole thing, and I could go on and on and on and on and on and tell you stories about where things didn't go right. Like one time in Florida, those guys that were there, I know, Richard, you listened to this. You were there for this one, where we got thrown out. I mean, I've got a 280 students in a room, and I'm there on the last day, and we got thrown out. I mean, we got thrown out before the end of the program, and I'm doing my first big sell for my own program. This is a big deal for me. This is a Harv Eker event. But what had happened was we had a guy there who was one of my heroes, Larry Gilman from LA. So if you know Larry, go and tap him on the shoulder and say, I said hi. He had a big impact on my life, on my personal growth. He's all about authenticity, just a wonderful guy. But he was teaching a lesson to this one person, and he made him wear a pillowcase on his head. We're in the South. This guy looks like the KKK. Anyway, we just rubbed some people the wrong way, you know. And again, when you learn these things, and we get thrown out. I haven't even finished the event. So I turned it into a big lesson. I walked everyone outside. I recongregated them on the grass, and we continued and finished the event. And it was one of those, again, big things. But some of this other stuff hadn't happened. I mean, I would have just fallen apart and wouldn't know what to do. But I do believe that we are given this opportunity to build these muscles sometimes in a horrific way, but only if we can be a disaster, if we can mess up without it stopping us. And that's what it did for me. Remember, if I hadn't gone to that T. Harv Eker event and watched him, I would never have gone on stage again. That's the one thing I knew for sure. I would never, ever stand up there. Imagine that. I mean, the hundreds of thousands of students that I've worked with today. And you know, imagine I never discovered that. I'd probably still be walking around life thinking because I messed up so badly, not realizing that the reason I messed up, I believe, was because I could feel that pain. And now today when I work with really so many trainers. I mean, really hundreds and hundreds of trainers. And interestingly, you know, one of my goals is to personally train 10,000 trainers that will go out there and do this kind of work, really give them the skills and the ability to really understand, you know, whole brain learning, how to command a room, how to command an audience, all these different things that I teach. But imagine if that hadn't happened, I'd be wandering around and aimlessly, or I would have gone to that T. Harv Eker event and I would not have had the pain inside of me to notice how great he was, and saying, that's the guy I should model. That's the guy I should go after. That's the guy I should spend time with, because that's truly what it's about. You know, there's that wonderful saying that says you become the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. And so if you want to create more success, hang out with more successful people, and it's going to rub off in the end. So here I am. I'm leaving tomorrow for the Transformational Leadership Council, and I get to train there tomorrow in front of my peers, and feeling good about that. You know, it's a long way from falling off the back of the stage with my feet hovering through the curtain. Oh my goodness, that Houdini moment, that David Copperfield moment, where I certainly was a disaster who never even dreamed when I was upside down behind the curtain that I could ever, ever, ever become a master. That is not on my radar then. All I wanted to do was crawl out from under that curtain and run and hide again, saying, see, I can't do this. I can't do this. But truthfully, it's the combination of so many moments in my journey to sort of master the stage. It's the combination of all those things that didn't go well that's given me the courage now to stand in there. With anything goes wrong, I know how to handle it. I know how to handle myself, and I realize it's just another thing. I just have to show up, tell the truth, be myself, and you know, make sure that I'm prepared when I get there. So, guys, I want you to go out there, make this a phenomenal week. I'll see you when I get back from the Transformational Leadership Council, hanging out with some really cool dudes, and I'll tell you some more stories. I got a great guest next week. Can't wait.
That was kick-ass.